Welcome to electionspeakers.com, a nonpartisan analysis of the speaking skills of major political candidates and others affecting your voting decisions, and is brought to you by the Speech Improvement Company. Here are your hosts for electionspeakers.com, Lori Schloff and Dr. Dennis Becker.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Dennis Becker, and this is electionspeakers.com, the place to hear unique critique of the speaking styles of candidates and others who are part of this presidential campaign. And today is October 27, 8 days before Election Day. And joining me around the round table today, as usual, is my co-host, professional speech coach and author, Lori Schloff.
Hello, Dennis. Hello, Deborah.
And with us, as Lori alludes to, is Dr. Deborah London, a professional speech coach and author, and of course, our debate expert that you've heard many times. Debbie, nice to have you today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back.
Now, we have a lot to talk about because we're getting so close to the election and so many things have changed and so many things have remained the same, boring, same. And so we've got some interesting topics today. Lori, what are we going to be talking about today?
Sure. Wow. There's so many suggestions from my colleagues and also from the folks listening. How about talking a little bit, we haven't talked in a while, about Biden style. What's he up to? What's going on in the Sarah Palin world in terms of her speaking patterns? And of course, I've got a comment on the wardrobe issue. I'd like to also talk about Michelle Obama's speech to the nation, her response to Bush's radio message. And let's begin with an interesting tidbit. Consumer advocate Ralph Nader and relentless presidential candidate set a Guinness Book World Record. He gave, I think it was 2 days ago, 17 political speeches in 1 day, totaling how many minutes?
255.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, congratulations,
yeah.
Ralph.
Oh, my.
Well, it's obviously quality,
congratulations
not quantity.
Listeners.
Yeah. Do you think someone listened that long, though?
Oh, that's a record.
It could have been 17 different
you
places.
You were saying before I so
just,
rudely...
Just that it's obviously quality, not quantity, people are listening for, which is good.
Mm-hmm. He's been talking a long time. I saw him at Rutgers University in 1972.
Yeah, well, listen...
He's been speaking a long
time. And I think the guy has, over the years, and even today, he has some really good points. I think he makes good points, and I think in the long term, America is a better place because of having a Ralph Nader in the marketplace. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Dennis, I agree. He's definitely been influential. However, as much as, you know, the average person, I'm guessing, only knows of two political parties in this country. But we technically are not a two-party system. There's over a dozen parties, and you can go online easily, and everything from Libertarian to the Green Party, and even several more that are a little obscure, if you will. But really, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, just no one can penetrate beyond those two. We'll always be a bipartisan.
Well, you know, we're here at electionspeakers.com, we're all about the speaking style of whomever we're speaking about. And, you know, to Ralph Nader's, to comment about Ralph Nader, I think over the years, despite what I've said about his having good things to talk about, even good things to say, the guy never really improved or was concerned, it seems to me, about his style of speaking. Two things impress you. First of all, this is the minor of the two. He's always been frumpy. You know, round-shouldered, clothes don't fit properly. The guy just doesn't present himself as being presidential or executive or whatever. Okay, just a look. Secondly, his speaking style has not changed. Now, for better or worse, it hasn't changed in 30-some years. It's slow, he rambles, and I think if the guy had a little bit better coaching or some better advice, he'd be in a much better position today.
Good point. Also, he seems to be overly serious, which is not a popular thing these days.
No, well, it's never actually been a popular thing.
No.
In fact, I was mentioning earlier to my colleagues that there was a documentary on the radio last night about the 1968 election, and Humphrey was involved, and what was his downfall was that he was too optimistic, too friendly, and he wasn't serious or straightforward enough.
Interesting. Wow, you can't win. Well, somebody's going to win. Dennis, who do you think is winning in terms of style? I know you had a few comments to make about Palin, McCain, and Biden's style as well.
Well, I'll tell you, there's no question in my mind that if you were already disposed towards McCain or Obama, that's who's winning. I mean, minds aren't being changed not changed. They may be still being made up in some. These are the infamous independent voters, undecided voters. But you know, if you're already committed to a conservative viewpoint or a liberal viewpoint, you already know who you're going to vote for. Now, to the issue of style at this point. This morning, just this morning, is October 27th, I was listening to a speech by Senator McCain. And, you know, the intensity of his style has gotten even greater. Mm-hmm. I want to give you an example.
Please.
This morning I heard him speaking, and he was giving a speech of, you know, the same stuff. They all say the same old stuff at this point. He has two inflection patterns that he uses. And I think both of them are not serving him well. The first one is an inflection pattern of what I would describe as amazement. It's the way people sound when they are amazed at things. So it's something like this. He'll say something like, "And my opponent wants to raise the taxes on 42% of all the population."
That's very good, actually.
Goes up, okay? Mm. He'll say, "And I'm just not going to do that." You know, it goes up at the end. There's a certain intensity to his voice and an up inflection. On the other hand, and I heard him in the same speech this morning, have the sound of anger. Here is where the inflection pattern goes down. Now, he'll say, "That's not the kind of government that I'll bring you. This isn't the sort of thing that we need at a time of difficulty in this nation." It's stronger. It's a down inflection at the end of a sentence. It's faster paced, rate and pace. Those of you who are frequent listeners know that rate is the speed at which a speaker puts words together. Pace is the speed at which a speaker puts thoughts together. McCain increases both his rate and his pace when he's angry, and he slows it down when he's got this sound of amazement. Now, those two sounds on his part, I think, are not resonating, and they're not working for folks, because in such an emotional time in our country, to have a leader who himself gets emotional or himself gets angry doesn't sit well, I don't think, with folks. On the other hand, Obama is a guy who's been accused of having not enough of that kind
right.
of thing.
Yeah.
So his inflection pattern tends to be straight, tends to be mm-hmm. flat. He finishes almost everything with a straight inflection. Now and then he'll go down to show emphasis. So I don't think the inflection patterns are working as well for McCain as they are for Obama at this point.
Mm-hmm. And when you say at this point, at sort of this point in time in history,
yes.
We talked about this last time, what people might be looking for is a feeling of security and reassurance. Dr. London, anybody stand out this week as effective or ineffective style-wise?
You know, what Dennis said is right on. At this point, it's a little bit more of the same. I have noticed McCain getting a little more extreme, but that also speaks to me of what their teams are probably encouraging them to do, and that, in fact, I talked to a Washington insider, a political consultant this weekend, who said absolutely he knows people on both of the teams for each candidate, and Obama is being told to just continue on with what he's doing. Nothing too abrupt. Keep steady on. Whereas McCain, they're trying all kinds of sort of things to just jump out ahead. I've said that myself earlier. So no one's style really, even Palin, and this can go to fashion when you
sure.
mentioned that earlier. I saw a clip earlier with Elizabeth Hasselbeck. Is that her name from
sure.
The View?
Yeah, that's her name.
She introed Palin, which I'm not really sure what her credibility is beyond the fact that she got herself onto.
They're politically simpatico.
So, you know, Palin says the same things. They're accusing the Republicans of digressing and talking about fashion and really watering down the issues, but they keep bringing them up again. So I'm not. It's kind of a wash, if you ask me, and the whole fashion question and all that. And you just.
Well, here's my fashion question, and it's really hard to talk about fashion seriously because it's so fun and does seem frivolous, but here's my serious question. Does the wardrobe of a communicator make a difference, both in terms of how the person ends up looking, the quality, the cost? I'm very interested in hearing my fellow colleagues' opinions on this.
I think so, definitely. I think we all make judgments, and visually that's the first thing we see. I mean, we know that as coaches. You know, we're always telling clients that your credibility, your initial credibility is derived from your appearance. So I think absolutely. And I think when you're looking for what you want in a leader, I think someone who looks presidential or formal, I think that makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think there's any doubt about it that in every walk of life, not just politics, in every walk of life, people will judge you. They see you walk in the door, the first thing they judge is your appearance.
Sure.
Second thing we judge, of course they judge, we know, is the way you speak, and that's where we come in. But the appearance is the issue. And that's particularly true with, and I'll use this word advisedly, celebrities. And that does not just mean in the entertainment business. That's a sports business, it's a business business, and Donald Trump is a celebrity, for example, and certainly in politics. So the way they appear does make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. It seems that there is this constant tension, which we've talked about on other themes, between do we want a leader to be one of us or do we want them to be better than us? Translated into, do we want Sarah Palin shopping at TJ Maxx, just like lots of us do, or do we want her to be better than us and get higher quality clothes?
Well, I definitely can say that Sarah Palin is hoping it's the former, that she wants, she's hoping that she's going to get in on what we want. She's really hammering home that she shops at consignment shops, that, you know, that she's just like us, her comfort clothes, and she's really taking that to the bank. Well, she's trying to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, the point was made a moment ago about these issues would go away if she would stop talking about them. But again this morning, in a speech in Iowa this morning, she came out and she said, and it was a beautiful day outdoors and all, she said, oh, I'm so glad to be here. She said, and it's such a beautiful, nice, crisp day, a fall day, and I'm staying warm in my own jacket. She had to make a point of that. So she just doesn't let it go.
Yeah.
I mean, around the dinner table and when you're having a party, these jokes kind of work. But this is a serious time and a serious issue. There's an accusation, if you will, been made against her or about her, which is a serious thing for the business of politics. It's not like going to a party or what you wear to work. Politics is a different issue. And for her to keep raising this issue, and it just, I don't think it's working for her.
I agree. We're 8 days out. She needs to inject some substance into her content, mm-hmm. more so than she has done, or I think it's going to continue to hurt.
Before we get into substance, can I just say three things that I want listeners to hear related to clothing that come up when we involve our style consultants? One is the color of what you wear. Second is the fit, which seems essential for being on television. And third is quality. And all three of those things have to be things that listeners, if you're going to be out there invisible, you absolutely will need to consider. Okay, now on to deeper things.
Now, wait a minute. Before we leave the vice presidential thing, okay, let's balance this out. And I want to talk about Joe Biden, who I also heard this morning. Joe Biden was talking, and I'm going to give two comments. And you can decide which is the good and which is the bad. I don't know. First thing I noticed about him was this morning he was giving a speech about the difficulties that the nation is facing, and in particular, as he always does, the difficulties of the average folks with whom he identifies. His speaking style was slow, it was soft, it was deliberate. And he uses a technique that we call intensity when he gets to a point that he wants to emphasize. Instead of, in some cases, just getting louder and thumping it and shouting it, he uses the opposite. And he'll say, is that what you want? Do we need that? This is something that the rest of us have to feel for. That's kind of an intensity. And he used it a lot this morning. And he was talking about the very emotional subjects of losing your job and health care. And at one point he told a story, as he is wont to do, about the longest walk. And it was the walk that parents have to take up the stairs into their child's bedroom to tell them that they had just lost their job. He told that story very, very effectively. And it was very moving. You could have heard a pin drop in that audience. This guy had them wrapped up. So that's the first comment. He did a very effective job of that. The second comment is, in 4 minutes, so you guys know what I'm going to say probably, in a 1 minute time frame, ladies and gentlemen, Ladies and gentlemen.
Dennis, I want to ask you about that, though.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's insincere. It's like John McCain's good friends.
Right, and that's what I was going to bring up, because I know that really irritates you.
Oh, it's so fake.
But the my friends bothers me more than the ladies and gentlemen. How should he address the people?
Well, what's the difference?
How should he address them?
It's not what he's saying. It's that he's saying it. He says a term, ladies and gentlemen, he says a term which he uses as sort of a default thing. And that, to me, makes it insincere, as McCain.
I agree with you on that. So I'm asking if either one of them were your candidate and they said, well, when I want to address my audience directly, should I say folks? Should I say you guys?
That's a very good coaching point. And we all coach on those kind of things. So the first thing we would all recognize as coaches is not to repeat the same thing over and over, okay? Whether it's my friends or ladies and gentlemen or folks or whatever it is, but vary those things. In some cases, he should be saying we even, including himself as part of giving the sense that I am one of you. We this or we that in some cases. Other cases, he could say folks, absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, it's fine. I would even advise a Biden, for example, to use my friends now and then. And I would do the same thing with McCain. But the same thing almost every time, to me, gets insincere.
Mm-hmm. So that's a point that we're also making to listeners, is just watch out for repetition. Do we humans have a tendency to use the same phrases over and over? Would that become a habit?
Oh, absolutely. That's how we get regionalisms and colloquialisms and things that say in certain parts of the country. If you go down south, for example, I guarantee you, within a 5-minute conversation, you're going to hear somebody say, "I tell you what, I tell you what." That's a regionalism. We all begin to say it. We over and over. We have the same things in all parts of the country. So, human beings, I think, do catch on to repetitive
words.
Sure, and
that's not to be confused with the rhetorical device of repetition,
because they can
be very effective.
Yes.
And the most classic case is Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech. That's the most famous example of repetition that was so effective. But most people can't pull that off.
Mm-hmm. What I also heard from you, Dennis, is that the use of a story told well is very effective. Is that something everyone can learn to do?
You know, in the understanding of adult learning, what we know about adults and how they learn, not children now, but adults and how they learn, we know that telling a story about something is a very effective way to get a point across and have it remembered by your listeners. So the answer to your question is yes, storytelling is a very effective tool to use. However, it can be, like anything, can be overused. And if you have constantly, "I remember, well, once upon a time, then there was a story of," you know, in certain amount of a length of time, too many stories can be too much. Mm-hmm. But yes, it's a very effective tool.
Well, that's a good question. Is out of the whole crew, presidential and vice presidential candidates, who stands out as the best storyteller?
The best?
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to change any minds. This is that liberal conservative thing again. Conservatives are going to think John McCain's a great storyteller because he has great stories to tell. Liberals, on the other hand, I don't think they'll say it's Obama.
No,
but I think they'll say
not
it's
a storyteller.
Biden, maybe, yeah. And also because, you know, with Biden, I also think that's uniting in a different way than when McCain uses it. Because Biden, when he uses stories, he sometimes uses very personal stories, his personal tragedies in his life that he alludes to. And I think that humanizes him. I think that is a little bit of a connection. With McCain, his stories are definitely split between conservative and liberal, but they keep going back to the same, that he was a, you know, prisoner of war.
Yeah. The same stories after a while can be just, it's like my friends or ladies and gentlemen, they begin to lose
and
their
And I'm not minimizing what he went through
not,
at all.
Of course not.
Alrighty. I don't know if my colleagues heard, because I was going to say see, but you couldn't have seen Michelle Obama's response to George W. Bush's radio commentary that he gives every Saturday morning at 10:30. And it was remarkable in the following way. She's always poised, but she was particularly sweet, is a word that I'd use. And I've been so surprised over the months at some of her poll numbers that she's just not well-liked. Mm. People don't find her likable. She was incredibly likable in this, whatever, 1-minute or 2-minute piece. her content was about her family. Her content was about encouraging everybody to vote. It was very, very pathos or appealing to the emotions. She had no highs or lows in terms of her vocal range. Or her pitch, and she has been criticized for, at times, perhaps coming across as too strident. So I think it was a real win for her in terms of her public image.
Did she talk about policy at all?
Was it not at all. It was well, here was the deal. Obama perhaps would have given it, but he was visiting his grandmother, who, of course, was ill.
Right.
So Michelle stood in for him. Mm-hmm. And I thought she did a very good job of appealing to Americans who may not have in the past viewed her as soft and likable. Mm-hmm. It felt to me like she was aiming for that.
Interesting.
Well, I wanted to make something, I wanted to make a note about... back to nonverbal for just a second, because I came across a very interesting article in the Wall Street Journal this week about a professor at MIT, Dr. Alex Pentland, who has done a study and has come up with a technological way to measure human behavior. He uses something called a sociometer. It's a wearable, badge-like contraption that... continuously measures the various nonverbal aspects of people's interactions. Okay?
Okay.
Now, he didn't use this in politics, but of course the claim is that it could be extended to politics. But what he did was he put this sociometer to work with people who were making business presentations where they were trying to get money. They were soliciting money for their business plans. And bottom line of this, here's what happens. It turns out that you can estimate the ratings that you give each other just by listening to the tone of their voice. You don't have to know anything about their business plan. You don't have to know anything about the person, the executive who's giving it. It was how they delivered the plan that determined how it was rated. Imagine this. They were listening to how excited the presenter was about the plan, and not about the facts. And those who had a more interesting or, and I don't mean content-wise, but presentation-wise, had a more interesting and exciting delivery were the ones who were granted the most acceptance of their plans. Imagine that?
Yes, because it has been proven that the faster someone speaks, the more persuasive they are.
So it's with tone... This isn't just a secret way to get people interested in the speech improvement company, is it?
No.
No, just teasing. It's really great validation for the work we speech coaches do.
And the fact that we're located right across the river from MIT.
No.
But it's a serious interest. It was of serious interest to me because, as a coach, it's one of the first times I've heard of actual technology being applied fair way to judge whether or not people liked you because of what you said or the way you delivered it. And it turns out the way you deliver it makes a big difference.
All right, so help me out here. So is it sounding enthusiastic? Because we often have heard, let's say if you're with like shyer or quieter people, maybe you shouldn't be so come on strong. Does he break it down into, is it volume, is it vocal variety or showing meaning and... inflection, or was it just in subjective judgments of enthusiasm?
Well,
or none of the above.
it's kind of in this case it's objective because it was done by a sociometer. This thing, and it has to do with tone of voice, speed of speaking, facial expressions, even. Anyway, it was a very interesting thing. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but
like,
it was really interesting.
It sounds like, in addition to having a coach, it sounds like one could also have this scientific measurement of how you're coming across. We'd be very interested. Perhaps we'll come on one of our election speaker shows. That would be really great.
Well, I think they're known at MIT for trying to apply technology to pretty much just about everything.
Right. Now, clients often ask, especially those who listen to electionspeakers.com, when you coaches coach people, what do you put your emphasis on?
Well, I think, it clearly... depends on what the person is interested in. I mean, we have some folks who come in your coach and they say, look, I want to learn this specific thing for this specific event. that's a very easy kind of a coaching experience because you know precisely what you need to do for that to help that individual. There are cases when folks come in and say, look, I'll give you a real-life example. I had a woman come in to see me just recently, within this last 10 days, excuse me, and she's running for office, and she had a major debate coming up, and she wanted to figure out, how do I debate this other person who is, first of all, an incumbent, and secondly, very strong? So that was specific, but it was general in the sense that we had to look at all of the things right. surrounding her, the experience and so forth, to coach her on that. So depending on the need of the individual, we coach according to what they, I'm sure, Debbie, you find the same thing, what they need.
Sure, absolutely. And just in that instance that you were talking about, there are so many more issues and not just her delivery, but there were just so many other variables. And that's one of the things that's specific to not specific, but it's more, you find that more with politics, that it's not just whether someone's an incumbent, whether someone, you know, is an outsider, whether someone is a native of the area. And there's so many issues that have to be taken into consideration. You know, just before we end for the day, I don't know how close we're getting.
Close.
But I do want to just bring up
everything is getting close, including the election.
I do want to bring up something about some of the journalists, the major news commentators. I was watching clips recently, and I saw Lester Holt and Tom Brokaw, not together, but both their own clips, complete opposites. Lester Holt almost has a pleasant expression on his face no matter what he is saying. I find him very amiable, very pleasant. Whereas Tom Brokaw is so serious all the time. It's almost like his brows are furrowed, and he just, everything seems so serious mm-hmm. when he's saying it. And I'm wondering if that's if you would advise, you know, do you prefer, is it just a personal preference? What mm-hmm. what do you make of that?
In the way
they're
really
delivering
different.
They're delivering very similar news.
But it's clearly a style issue. And you know, broadcast news, like the entertainment business, is an entertainment form of one sort. And each person needs to have his or her style. They get paid because they are stylistically attractive mm-hmm. to the viewers. And he has a sort of a serious, if you will, in quotes, style, as opposed to, I can't possibly include Bill O'Reilly in the same sentence, but as opposed to others who have a different style because they think that draws attention to them and money to their station. The guy who I, along the line of that, the guy who I'm always fascinated by, a guy I have admired for years, a great admiration and respect for his abilities, is Wolf Blitzer from CNN. But Wolf Blitzer, please stop saying
And they're quick, aren't they? Little quickies.
And they come in the middle. It can be a phrase. Right. It can be a mm-hmm. phrase in the middle of a phrase. Between two words, you'll stick a. It just gets so annoying, and I wish mm-hmm. the guy is so good at what he does. If he could only capture that and get rid of that from his presentation, mm-hmm. he'd be so much more effective.
Sure, I would call that a vocalized pause.
Vocalized pause that he doesn't need.
Right.
But I think it's such a bad habit now. And you know, the guy's got a lot of respect. I suspect that people are afraid to approach him and tell them.
Mm-hmm. Though, of course, he was in pretty good company since it seemed like both McCain and Obama had issues with being fluent in vocalized pauses. What can we look forward to in the next 8 days? Are you feeling excitement about this?
Oh,
or
yeah. Listen, Wednesday night is the night that Obama has bought 30 minutes of airtime.
Tell us about that. What's happening?
You know, all I can tell you is that he bought 30 minutes of airtime, and he bought it quite a while ago, but it wasn't really talked about very much. It's only been recently, but Saturday Night Live did do a spoof on it as to what you might expect coming up. And the spoof was that it was going to be akin to a variety show. Uh-huh. You know, and I mean, it was as so funny as all the SNL skits
are.
Oh,
that is. I saw that. But is this a live piece, do you know, the 30 minutes, or is it a taped piece?
You know, I don't know. I don't want to say because I heard that the SNL skit had to be rewritten very recently because Amy Poehler gave birth after the last show, and obviously she was going to figure into this 30 minutes from SNL before it's either before or after or right after Obama.
Mm-hmm. So something to look forward to, whatever it is. I'm sure we'll learn more about it.
I'm sure we'll mm-hmm. be reporting on it next mm-hmm. week when we're mm-hmm. back. Speaking of that, just one final note. We were mentioning how we coach, and people can come in certain situations and so forth. On the other hand, Lori Schlaff, our esteemed co-host here, has just come back from a very shall we say, a challenging or
well, a terrific
speaking
conference.
Different kind of thing. Tell us a little about that before we go.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it was a terrific conference in Chicago. It was basically helping women.
You were coaching too?
Yeah, I was coaching people. I was one of the speakers, and the whole goal was to help females become better at educating other females, in this case about financial topics. Mm-hmm. And they ate it up because it's very important for people to feel empowered as communicators. Mm-hmm. And I think, in a way, that's sort of been the topic of all our electionspeakers.com is, are we seeing people we'd want in power?
Right.
Are they using power well? Are they communicating leadership and power well? And and all of us in our lives are going to be leaders, in some arena. So thank you for mentioning that. I had a chance to really get people psyched up about being leaders.
Well, the reason I mentioned it is because, as you say, it's exactly along the same lines of what we're doing here at electionspeakers.com. The reason we came along with this program weekly is to help all of those of you who are listening, to help you understand how to make your vote count by looking and listening to all of the nuances, tricks, and techniques that speakers use that we as professional speech coaches see in a somewhat different light. We like to report on them and give you some insights as to what they mean to your voting decisions. And that's exactly why we're here. And speaking of that, if you have a comment on how the program is going or speaking styles of any of the folks that you hear out there, please don't hesitate to let us know. You know how to do it. We've been getting them from all over the world. Why not from you? Simply drop us a line at comments@electionspeakers.com. That's comments@electionspeakers.com. We enjoy hearing from you, so why not hear from you? All right. We will hear from you, hopefully, between now and next Monday. And those of you who are Laurie Schlaff, Dr. Deborah London, thank you for joining us for today's program.
And
I'm sure we'll hear you next week. And next week, of course, will be the day before the big day. So please be with us at that time. And until then, this is Dr. Dennis Becker saying thanks for listening and bye for now.
You've been listening to electionspeakers.com, a nonpartisan analysis of the speaking skills of major political candidates and others included in the 2008 U.S. presidential elections. electionspeakers.com is a production of the Speech Improvement Company and is posted every Monday.